Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, September 8th, 2013. This is episode 1012. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. And by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service. It just makes sense. You'll save money with Ting by paying only for what you use. You don't need a contract, and Ting offers unlimited devices on a single pooled plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit techguy.ting.com. And by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. To get this special offer, go to Stamps.com. Click on the microphone and enter Tech Guy. That's stamps.com. Use the offer code Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy, and it's time to talk about computers and cell phones and the internet, home theater. Our digital photographer, Chris Marquardt, will do some myth busting today. We're going to have a great day at 8888 Ask Leo. Glad you're here. 888-827-5536. That's the number. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. You'll be calling Heather and the phone ranger, and we'll get you on the air here. If you're outside the U.S. or Canada, you can also use Skype to call us. And what's nice about Skype is now you know that Microsoft and the NSA will also be listening to the call. So some, you know, the NSA is very good about computer support. So you can just, you know, while you're on the Skype call, just ask the question out loud. Maybe some NSA technician will just chime in. Oh, yeah, here. Definitely, you need to reboot and reinstall Windows. They have. It's funny because, and I've pushed people towards these in the past, on the NSA website, they have excellent guides to securing Windows and Macintosh. They're very sophisticated, you know, computer users, the National Security Administration. They have two, you know, they have really two missions. One is to protect us, of course, against terrorism overseas and so forth, but the other is to make sure that we are cyber secure. So this is why it's a little frustrating that they've been spending apparently $250 million a year to subvert our encryption, subvert the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, which sets the standards for military encryption and government encryption, and subvert, they don't say exactly which, but a major internet telephony and messaging program, which everybody pretty much agrees is Skype. It seems like those are counter missions. They're securing us. The problem is if you put a back door, that's what they've been doing. That's what the news says, is that the feds, the spooks are putting back doors in our technology so that they can spy on it. The problem is these back doors rarely stay, you know, in the province of the feds. The bad guys get them too. If back door is bad, it means there's a hole. And you know, so they're actually working against themselves, I guess. That's encouraging, isn't it? Let's talk about something nicer. What do you say? You know, this is Christmas Eve for geeks. You know that.
Oh, right.
Day after tomorrow, on Tuesday, Apple will announce a new something. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
We don't really care what. Anything new for Apple.
How do we usually observe that?
Well, we like to dress in green. I don't know.
And we're going to open champagne.
Yeah, we stay up late on Monday night hoping that Santa Jobs comes and delivers us something wonderful in the morning.
Do we hang something by the something?
Hang an iPhone sock. An iPod sock by, you know, they make those, right? They made them. I remember going to an event. In fact, the last event I was at this place that they're going to have the event on Tuesday, the Apple Town Hall on Apple's Cupertino, California campus. The last event I went to was the big announcement of iPod socks and the Apple Hi-Fi, both of which have, I think, long gone. They might still make the socks. We were very disappointed. Imagine, geek Christmas Eve, you go to the beautiful Apple campus, all excited, all at Twitter, with her eyes bugged out and cherry cheeks like sugar plum fairies or whatever it is. And you get there and they announce socks. That's like getting socks for Christmas.
Exactly.
It's not good.
Coal in your stocking.
Yeah.
You have these socks too. I'm
and then
sorry,
Steve Jobs has the nerve to say the iPod Hi-Fi is so good I've thrown away all my high-end stereo equipment. Yeah, right. That's the last time I went to an event there. Well, anyway, there's going to be one there. It's not very big, but 150 journalists can get in there. So it's tiny. So only the elite creme de la creme, the tame Apple press corps, as I like to call them, will be there. Those who will cheer and yell no matter what Apple announces. And probably, we're pretty sure, new iPhones will be announced, the 5S and the 5C. The fingerprint reader is the only thing, as far as I'm concerned, that's at all of interest in this new iPhone. Otherwise, it's pretty much an iPhone 5. A little faster, a little prettier. It's got the iOS 7. Maybe a better camera. That's a possibility. But really, the thing everybody's focused on is the fingerprint reader. And, you know, we've just got to hold off before we jump up into to our seats and cheer to see a few things. First of all, how well it works. We've seen fingerprint readers before that have been unreliable. Very unreliable. Did you see the Mythbusters segment where they made Play-Doh thumbs? It worked. Apple bought last year for many billions of dollars a fingerprint reading company called Authentech that made the fingerprint readers in many computers, which we, by the way, were later learned were compromised, that these were these were flawed, that they stored the passwords on the hard drive in an unencrypted fashion accessible to anybody. Nice. I'm sure they fixed that by now. I think before we jump up and down and say, ooh, a fingerprint reader in my phone, by the way, not the first. Samsung at Atrix. Wasn't it Samsung or who made the Atrix? Motorola? The Atrix had one. I remember that. Didn't work that well. Really, the question is, is it going to work well? And then if it does work reliably, because, you know, if it doesn't work reliably, then they have to say things like, oh, can't read your fingerprint? Well, just enter your PIN. And then it's no different than anything else. And if they do that, and you'll know right away on Tuesday, if they do that, that means, well, we couldn't get it to work 100%. I mean, it has to be 100%, or there has to be, oh, well, just enter your PIN in that case. And that means, well, you might as well just use the PIN, right? What's the big ruckus? But if, let's say it does. Let's say they've figured it out. They got it working. And Apple's, you know, Apple, there's a possibility. They work hard on this stuff. They got it working perfectly. Then, and this will be the other thing to watch as you're keeping score on Tuesday, you'll have to see, well, okay, what kind of support is there? We in the tech press are often excited about new technologies. I was very excited about the Chromecast, the Google Chromecast. Bought a few of them, $35. I mean, what could go wrong at that price? Even if they didn't do a whole lot. And they're great. Now, in fact, I was watching a TV show on it last night. But the jury's still out on the Chromecast, because if it doesn't get broad-based support from other companies besides Google, if it's just Netflix, Google, Pandora, and I haven't even seen the Pandora update yet, then it's going to be, yeah, huh? Same thing with Apple fingerprint reading. If nothing supports it, if it doesn't make a big difference, if it just unlocks the phone, whoopsie doodly. On the other hand, if, you know, Apple has this this passbook, whatever thing, which I haven't paid much attention to because up to now, all it's done is Fandango and, you know, airplane tickets. But if you could put a credit card in there, it becomes your wallet. A wallet unlocked by the key with a thumbprint. A reliable thumbprint that really identifies you and only you? Well, we'll just have to wait and see. I think you can watch carefully this announcement and see what they say, and you'll get some idea of whether this is going to change the world or not. Or are you just going to keep using Passbook to get a coffee at Starbucks, or are you going to start using it to buy everything? And of course, it won't just be Apple that has to support this. All the merchants have to adopt it and so forth. We're ready. We're ready for, you know, what they call strong authentication, especially now with the NSA. Although, I apologize. I know I'm just spoiling your beautiful Sunday. But I do have to point out that the latest story is that the NSA can tap user data on the iPhone. This is from the German newspaper Spiegel, Der Spiegel. Can tap user data on the iPhone, devices using Android and BlackBerry. A system, according to Der Spiegel, believed previously to be highly secure. So, if the NSA, according to documents from the NSA, can just, you know, see whatever's going on your iPhone, I don't think a fingerprint reader is going to make a huge difference. Apple be smart. I mean, this is an opportunity right now to say, hey, we have the most secure platform. Even the government can't get into it. But I don't know if they'll say that on Tuesday. Anyway, we'll be watching. We'll talk about it, of course. You got a question about technology? Let's talk. 8888 Ask Leo. I'm Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I can never interrupt Eric Clapton. I just can't. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. 888-827-5536. We have, and I really always forget to mention this. I should always mention it right at the beginning of the show. A fabulous chat room full of all sorts of interesting people. We keep it clean, so you could go in there and not have, you know, fear of being flamed or anything, because we have lots of great moderators. But you're all invited, and it's a great way to kind of participate in the show from behind the scenes. And I thank our moderators. Wow, there's more of them all the time. Dan and Brad and Canuck and Cheeto and CWBP and Houdini 7 and Inferno 10, Leggett, Life Suzu, Marmot Mick, Nightflower, Rubicant, Scooter X, Sly Ferret, Tech Zen, and TTK. Holy cow. And Theater Monkey. You're Theater Monkey? Why aren't you in there moderating? Get in there. one of our mods on vacation. Nice to see you. That's great. Welcome. So if you want to visit the chat, all you got to do is go to the website, techguylabs.com, and click the link there, and you can get in there and participate. And one of the great things about being a member of the chat room is, for me, is we have so many smart people in there. As I'm taking calls, I often say, I don't know. What does the chat room say? And there's usually, you know, there's 700 people in there right now. So there's usually somebody in there who can help us. So think of this as a really not just you calling me to ask a question, but we're a group of people ready, a brain trust, ready and willing to make your technology experience better. The phone ranger, Heather Hammond, is the front line of that brain trust. She's at the point. You're taking point today. Who should I talk to first?
It was a good little football analogy, huh?
Well, actually, battle analogy. You're in the front of the division as we head over the hill and into tech land.
Okay, well, let's talk to Juan in Sherman Oaks.
Oh, all right, Juan. It sounded like you'd pick that one out of a hat.
I did kind of what you do. Like, what does that line say?
What does that say? Who are, you know, we've got this great call screening stuff from Telos, the VX. But we've said it, and I think you can change this, but we've said it to be very tiny print. And I have to just squint at it. Yes.
I don't know how you read that at all.
Well, you have like a computer screen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm reading on the phone.
Way more normal.
I kind of enjoy it. I never know what I'm going to see.
Magnifying glass.
I have one. Hey, Juan, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Leo. Listen, I was wondering if you could suggest a specific HD camcorder model for me in the $500 range, maybe. And well, I'm a fan of Consumer Reports. The last time these guys ran an analysis on these things was way back in December 2011. So,
technology—that's a lifetime ago, isn't
it? Exactly. So you're my only hope here.
Well, I think part of the reason we don't pay as much attention as we used to camcorders is people aren't. I think that category is starting to wither away, much like standalone GPSs.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
You got SLRs, even point-and-shoots shoot HD video very competently nowadays.
Yeah.
So a lot of people just don't find the need for a standalone camcorder.
Uh-huh.
But there are reasons you might, for instance, if you're recording speeches, you know, long events, sermons, that kind of thing, a SLR or a digital camera is not going to be a good choice for that.
Right. Yeah, I don't want to, you know, just carry along this bulky thing. And it's awkward for me. I want something that is dedicated and specifically for that. And I just have a newborn, so, you know.
You do want video.
Yeah.
The most cherished video I have is of my son, now 18 in college, reading to me for the first time. when he was, I don't know, what is that? That's first grade, something like that.
Yeah.
And he, I recorded it on an Olympus still camera that had, was one of the first ones I ever had that had video. And so it's just chance that I have this 15-second clip, but I'm so grateful that I do. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, nowadays it'd probably be on a smartphone. But anyway, I'm going to help you, even though.
Thank you.
Not many people buy these anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
What we use in our studio are Canon Vixias.
Okay.
And I really like this. I think, you know, Sony, Panasonic, Canon, they're all fine. JVC, they're all fine. Uh-huh. But we love the Vixias. They come in a broad price range. The ones we use, the HFG10s, were about $1,500 when we bought them. I see now a G20's about $1,000. But they make other Vixias. The M500's $500. You can even go as low as $299. They're feeling the pressure as well, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, they can't sell a $1,000 camcorder anymore because nobody will buy it.
Okay.
So the HFR 400, for instance, is $299 on Canon. Stabilized, optical stabilization, so it's great. Great HD quality. These are fine, and they record to SD cards, so you just pop them out and put them in your computer.
Yeah, which one was that model you mentioned?
That's the HF
R400. R400, okay.
But I think our new standard when we upgrade is G20s, right? Yeah. We used to use the G10s. The cameras we use, if you want to see what they look like, you can download any of our videos of this show or any of our shows at twit.tv or even watch live. Although live isn't as high quality as it could be because it's streaming. These are as good as any studio camera we've ever used.
Okay.
The issue with digital in general, though, is that low light performance is not great. And unfortunately, when you've got a baby, you're not going to shine bright cleat lights to his eyes.
Yeah.
All right, has the baby arrived?
She's a couple of months old now.
Oh, isn't that great? Admitting that it's not as good as a pro thing, uh-huh. But I bet you still use your camera phone for video and pictures more than anything because it's there.
Yeah, it's just I'm not a fan of a camera phone quality.
All right. You're a quality fanatic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, of course, John, who's my studio manager and a total geek, is pointing his glasses, saying, Google Glass. You can't buy it right now. But the rumor is you'll be able to buy that next year. Too late for this round, but maybe for the next baby. And one of the advantages of Google Glass, I have to say, again, camera phone quality. So, you know, since you're a quality nut, you're not going to want this. But the advantage of it is you're wearing them on your face. So you get the best baby pictures because the baby's not looking at the camera. The baby's looking at you. And the camera just happens to be over your right eyebrow. So I have seen, my friend Gina Trapani, who has Google Glass, she's one of our hosts, just had a baby. And the best baby pictures ever, because what the pictures are of the baby looking lovingly into her mother's eyes. And that's a really remarkable picture. So, and Glass is nice because it's out of the way. Now, it's way too early. I'm not going to recommend these. First of all, you can't get them. And even if you could get them next year at $300, I probably still wouldn't recommend it. But the point is that the future is that perhaps we don't even use cameras at all, but we have some sort of wearable technology that allows us to take pictures and video of whatever's going on in our life. I have to say, the quality of that picture of Henry reading to me for the first time, he had literally just learned to read, isn't the best quality. It's, it's 640 by 480. Doesn't matter. I hear his voice, I see the picture, it's highly precious. That's the key, the camera you have. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by our good friends at Gazelle. They've picked a good time to buy ads, because guess what? There's a lot of people who are saying, I might want a new phone, maybe an iPhone, a Note 3. There's a lot of new phones coming out. If you go to gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com, you'll note they are giving you offers for iPhones, a lot of kinds of phones, that are locked in till October 15th. That is awfully nice of them. Normally, it's a 30-day lock-in, which is plenty of time. But they know, that you're going to want to think about this. You're going to want to see the phone, play with it. They don't know exactly when the iPhone will come out or the Note 3. So this gives you a lot of time. Sell your iPhone 5. Let's say You have a they'll buy anything down to a 3G, but let's say you have an iPhone 5 on AT&T. That's probably the most common, right? 32 gig, $305. You're going to actually keep cash in your pocket. How about that? They also buy iPads, iPods, cell phones from a variety of manufacturers, including BlackBerry, HTC, LG, Motorola, Nokia, and Samsung. A broad range of tablets, too. They'll buy Surface, Microsoft Surface, Samsung, Google's. If you have an old Nexus 7, trade it in for the new one. GAZELLE.com. They even pay shipping on anything worth more than a buck. So what's the deal? Well, you get the quotes now. They're guaranteed through October 15th, right? And then when you're ready to sell, they'll send you a box. You pile it in the box. They pay the shipping. You get paid fast by check, PayPal, or if you're an Amazon person, which I am, do the Amazon gift card, and you can get 5% more. Offer's good for, well, normally 30 days, now through October 15th. Gazelle even wipes your data for free. Join the 600,000 customers who've been paid more than $100 million. I think I've got about $1 million of that myself. When you go through gadgets like I do, Gazelle! Oh, go to gazelle.com and sell your gadgets the easy way. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 ask Leo. That's the number. Going to the Netherlands. Robert is on the line. Hi, Robert.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Thanks for calling.
I have a question about time-lapse photography. I got myself a Sony Nex camera in the summer.
Very. You know, I just got a text message from my son saying, send me my Sony Nex 7. He didn't want to bring it to college with him because he wasn't sure about security. He loves the camera so much, he didn't want to take a risk. But I guess he's figured out how to keep it safe, and now he wants pictures. It's a nice camera, isn't it, that NEX?
Yes, I'm very, very happy with it because it's just so light and it takes good quality pictures.
Excellent. It's an APS-C sensor. That's a big sensor.
Yes, and yeah. I got myself a couple of lenses, so you can play with that as well if you like.
Yeah, excellent lenses, those E lenses. There's not a huge variety of them yet, but I'm sure Sony will do quite
well. There's enough to have a choice.
Oh, yeah.
So my question is about time-lapse. You can get apps to the camera from Sony. There is an app for time-lapse.
Yep.
It works fine, but I have a problem with automatic settings. So I decided to take just pictures, but now I want to put them in an arrangement without the camera. So I've uploaded to my Mac.
Oh, you got a Mac, you're in good shape. QuickTime will do this.
QuickTime.
Yeah, you might have to buy the Pro version, which is $30. I hope Apple doesn't kill QuickTime. They seem to be making noises like that. QuickTime X, QuickTime 10, is not nearly as capable. But with I've done this before. In fact, it's a fun thing to do, even if you're not using a time-lapse app. In other words, if you're not taking pictures in perfect time-lapse, but you're just taking pictures. A friend of mine, Peter Krogh, great photographer, took pictures of us landing in Sydney. I'm sure the stewardess would not have been happy, but I'm sorry, flight attendant would not have been happy. But as we're coming in, he sticks his SLR up against the window and just shoots kind of in a somewhat regular cadence, not perfect. So we got hundreds, I think maybe even as many as 1,000 images. You can import all of those, put them in one folder, and QuickTime will import them and set up a time-lapse for you. You can say how many images per second to show. It's really nice. It works quite well.
Fantastic.
Yeah, QuickTime 7 Pro is, and it's the easiest way to do this. Not QuickTime 10 won't do it, but QuickTime 7 Pro, it's the command is create image sequence. Other programs will do this. Adobe Premiere will do it. I think Photoshop might even do it. I haven't seen it in Lightroom or Aperture.
But if I use Aperture, I couldn't find anything similar.
Yeah. QuickTime, you can still download QuickTime 7, believe it or not. I hope Apple, though, you know, Apple is not acting as if they want to keep this around, and it's a shame. But it's a really great little simple way to do this.
I'm not sure what the current version is. It's 10.
Yeah, it's 10X, but X is so stripped down that Apple continues to offer the older QuickTime as a download. So
I need the Pro version.
You need QuickTime 7 Pro, and that is still available for download. It's $30, I think, and Windows or Mac, but since you're on a Mac, this will be very easy. Yeah, $29.99. And you can buy it right now. Yeah, it's well worth QuickTime Pro. So handy for a lot of things. If, you know, I, like a lot of people with camera phones, I'm always, unfortunately, tempted to take my videos in portrait mode, you know, the way up and down. So it looks like you're looking through a door, and that's dumb. It's just dumb, but I always do it. But QuickTime will let me rotate it over. Of course, then everything, you have to look at it sideways. But anyway, there's lots of nice features. QuickTime Pro is a very handy thing to have, and I keep my subscription up to date. No idea what Apple's going to do when Mavericks comes out. Hey, good to know you listen in Holland. That's great. The Netherlands. Really nice to know. Thank you for calling. Let's go to Temecula.
Yeah.
Hey, Rex, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, thanks for taking my call. Hey, you rock. You know that?
Thank you, sir. Very kind.
I really appreciate what you do and being running a smaller version of what you do myself. You're probably good friends with your pharmacist. So I appreciate that. I know the headaches.
What are you implying here? Yes, yeah, I am good friends with my
I think we should ditch all the tech gear and go find a beach in Tahiti and just, you know, call it a day.
Oh, but, man. So you do a little IT on the side, huh?
Yeah, I'm kind of called the video guy around these parts. And
awesome.
So I would tell your previous caller, by the way, there is no substitute for a big HD camera like a Sony FX1 or 7. If you're going to be doing sports, you got to have that.
Now, how much is an Sony FX?
Well, you know, if you get a qualified used, you can pick one up between 2 and 3. The newer version, I have a Sony V1U.
That's thousands, not hundreds, by the way. Go ahead. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. My V1U, I think, was just under 4,000.
Yeah.
And it's probably worth about 3 now. But
we use an EX1 for handheld, and it's great. It's a great camera.
Right.
Really
so there's
nice.
No substitute for a big, giant piece of glass.
I agree, but I don't think this guy is a pro here. I think he just wants pictures of his kid.
Right, right. Well, that's what I wanted when I started, and before you know it, I started doing videos. So you know how that goes.
Yes, I do.
You always bite off more than you chew with tech. Hey, yeah. My question today is: so in the corporate world, Outlook was my platform. And I lived in Outlook, and then my home, I used Outlook. But I've heard of this new folder feature in Gmail, and my whole mail system has gone float on me.
Mail is broken. Email is...
Gmail, yeah. And be done with Outlook forever.
Yeah, email is broken. The reason is there's so much of it, and it's not all spam by any means. But unfortunately, because of how... we interact with the world, even if you're not, getting a lot of spam. And Gmail does a great job getting rid of spam. In fact, Gmail is, in my opinion, is all you ever need to get rid of spam. But there's still a lot of mailing lists and reminders. I get, you know, PG&E and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And you don't want to miss that stuff, but you also makes it very hard to find your personal mail that you want to see. So, yes, Gmail... Google has tried a number of things with Gmail to solve this problem, and I expect more. In fact, I expect more companies to throw themselves at this problem. It's an extremely difficult challenge. We need email, but it's really broken right now. So what Gmail did at first was they created a priority inbox. You might remember this, where they would automatically sort messages from people you've conversed with on a regular basis into this priority inbox. Didn't work so well. So now they have a new solution that I think actually works. And you can still create Gmail filters. You'll see for those of you looking at the video on the left, I have like dozens of filters. That's, you know, junk and notifications and, you know, promotions. I have filters for all the mailing lists, blah, blah, blah. But Gmail automatically is doing something new called it creates a primary folder where it guesses that this is what people that you want. It says person to person conversations. Then it makes one called social. So if you get something from Twitter or LinkedIn or whatever, it's going to put those there automatically. It gets promotions, deals, offers, and other marketing emails. It has an updates folder. You could turn all of these on or off. I turn them all on, and it has a forums folder. These seem like arbitrary categorizations. They're really not. They're actually quite good. They do a good job of automatically putting stuff where it belongs. But if you don't like it, if you're reading something, say, in social, and you say, no, that really should be in primary, you just drag it to primary. And from then on, people who write to you, you know, those, that person will automatically go to the right folder. I find this works well. Highly recommend it. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. And our next caller is Kevin in Asheville, North Carolina. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, it's a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for all the awesome, awesome work that you do.
Thank you.
The reason I'm calling, work got out of my family that I'm a little bit of a geek, and one of my in-laws passed me a computer she's having issues with. It's an old Sony Vaio PCB RX 550 running the classic Pentium 4 processor.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's it still has the original OS it came with, which is, of course, Windows XP.
Is this one of those purple Vios?
No, it's kind of a grayish-looking thing. It's got a FireWire connector on the back. I don't know if it's made to be in a media box or what, but it's one of those where when she hits a button on the keyboard, you wait about 5 or 10 minutes, something may happen, something may not.
So a Pentium 4 was fine when they came out, 10 years ago. And she's running XP, of course.
Of course.
Yeah. And so there's a couple of issues of this. First of all, XP is hitting its end of life in April. That means there will be no more security updates for it, which is a bit of a concern. A Pentium 4 is awfully old, too. Now, if you only did the things that you could do when that computer came out, in other words, if you didn't install anything new, you didn't go on the internet, it'd be fine. But the problem is people always want to do the latest, greatest stuff on the oldest, worstest hardware.
Exactly. And I can't even find a low-power Linux distro that would do anything with this. I'm wondering, it's only got 256 megs of memory in it. Would it do me any good to try and track down the kind of memory this thing takes and add a little bit more to it, or would that be...
Well, it's pretty hard. It's It's pretty hard to do anything, even in Linux, with 256 megs of memory. Isn't that funny? I remember when 8 megs of memory was like the height of luxury. I walked into a computer store back when they had such things. I think it was an Egghead. And I remember hearing the salesman say, oh, yeah, what your ideal would be to have 8 megs of memory, because then you have 2 megs for the operating system, 2 megs for a RAM disk, 2 megs of cache, and 2 megs for the programs, and you're golden. That's megs, not gigs.
Oh, yeah.
Those days are gone. There's Tiny Linux, Puppy Linux, Damn Small Linux, it's called. That there are these versions of Linux that are designed to run in very old machines and should run fine even in 256 megs of RAM.
Would it do any good to add more memory to this thing?
Well, I'd hate to see you put more money into it. You might be able to find a cheap RAM stick for it. I don't know. Have you opened it up? Have you looked at it?
I've opened it up, and the memory sits, of course, right underneath the power supply, which you had to move out of the way, and then the other half of the memory stick sits underneath an old floppy drive. It's got both floppy and DVD drives.
You are a nice guy, I got to tell you. I mean, my reaction had Aunt Lizzie brought this to me would be, Aunt Lizzie, it's time to put that PC out to pasture, dear. It's seen better days.
Yeah, I've told her, you know, get you an iPad, get you a MacBook Air.
She would be so much happier with an iPad.
Oh, so
you know what? Maybe she's really doesn't want to spend $500 on an iPad. Talk about a Nexus 7 with her. $229.
Good option. Yeah, my first computer had only a 400 megahertz processor in it. So
oh, I can beat you. My first computer was 1 megahertz. But, I don't even think it was 1. I think it was even slower. I don't remember what the Atari 400 was, but it was pretty darn slow. My first PC was 4 megahertz. The early PCs were 3.77 megahertz.
And you look at how much power the average cell phone has nowadays.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking, most cell phones now are quad-core, multi-gigahertz, 1.7 gigahertz processors. Gigahertz? Billion hertz processors. There are 4 of them, and they have 2 gigs of memory. So a smartphone would be faster than this Vaio.
I'm a bit of a geek, nowhere near on the level, but you are. I aspire to be there one day. but this doesn't need a geek. I think this needs a miracle worker.
Yeah. Linux is a good choice. Look at DSL. I hate to say it. Darn small Linux. Darn small Linux or puppy Linux. These are very lightweight Linuxes designed for old machines.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Linux. That's all I use in my home system. But I wasn't sure if it'd even be worth the trouble of trying.
You know what's funny? It would run well, and she would be very secure.
She would be very secure. And if she can get anything done on it, then more power to her.
I'd convince her to get a Nexus 7 or if you could get probably $500 out of her. Especially with the new iPads coming, the old ones will probably drop in price. That would be a very good choice. You'd be surprised.
And a modern Nexus tablet is the best form of Linux out there right now.
It's beautiful.
It's something modern.
It's elegant. Beautiful screen. She'd go, wow, this is fast. She might be kind of tied to the idea of a keyboard. I don't know. That's the big thing you give up on tablets.
Okay.
And you can, all of these Linuxes we're talking about, you know this probably. You can get a what they call a live CD that you put it on and run it. I don't know. Does that machine have a CD player?
It does. It actually has a CD and DVD drive, which I was very shocked to see on here.
I wonder if it can boot to them. If it can boot to them, I would get a live CD and just run it and see what happens.
In fact, I'm watching you on my big screen through a live Linux distro right now, and it looks beautiful.
You rock. Well, I'm so glad to talk to you. You are a geek, Kevin. I give you the geek seal of approval. Boom.
Well, thank you, sir.
Thank you for calling. I appreciate it. Let's go to Idlewild, California. Hi, Eric. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Excellent. I'm really curious about software to hide my IP address. I'm wondering if the free downloads are any good or...
Well, let me talk about what's going on here. Each and every computer on the internet has a unique address. It's like a phone number. Every phone on the phone network worldwide, right? Seven, 8 billion people in the world, everybody has a unique phone number. You have to, otherwise you dial a number and you wouldn't know who you're going to get. So every computer has a unique number. Now, in your home network, every network has its own number. But once you get in the home network, your router, that's what you use a router for. It has one address, but it figures out which computer is using the internet. So that's a kind of an exception, but it's not really. Every single person has to have a unique one and only IP address. And websites, when you visit them, they log that. They keep track of that. It's because otherwise they can't have a conversation with you. When you go to a website and you request a page, it sees your IP address and it sends it to that IP address. Otherwise, how would it send it back to you? You need to have a return address, right? So there are techniques that allow you to hide your IP address, but it depends who you want to hide it from, right?
Yes.
And I'm not just talking about your internet service provider. They know your IP address. I'm not just talking about the website you're going to. I'm talking about the NSA and others. So I understand your desire for privacy, but the ways to do it are really limiting. The most common way, what we're trying to do is anonymize. Most common way is with the Tor network. So go read about TOR, the Onion router. It'll slow you down a lot, but it does anonymize you for everybody except the NSA. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. Hour two of the Tech Guy Show. Talking about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, GPS, ABC, DEF, and XYZ. Did you see the... let me finish this hiding your IP address, then I'm going to talk about Kit Kat bars. So our last caller at the end of the hour was saying, I want to hide my IP address. I don't want a website that I go to know who I am. Well, I don't know, actually. I don't know what his goal was. At some point, you have to make a connection. Now, you can use Tor, the onion router. It's named after the layers of an onion. The way Tor works is your traffic will go to a server running the Tor software. Now, it knows your IP address. It has to or couldn't have a conversation with you. It then connects to another Tor server. The second server doesn't know your address. It knows the address of the first server, and they have a designation about the conversation going on. You know, they identify it, an ID. That second server passes it on to a third, which doesn't know the first server or yours, just knows the second, and on and on and on. 8 layers of protection, 20 layers of protection, it can go on as ad infinitum. Then it exits out onto the internet on the last end, the last node of Tor. And the only IP address that the site you're visiting sees is that last end. It then has a conversation with the last end. The last end passes it back down the line one by one to you. And the theory being there's so many layers here that it's impossible for anybody to unravel them and figure out who's talking to whom. But, of course, the layers slow everything down. And it's really, it's a good, it's a successful anonymizing technology. I've looked at the researcher who claims that the NSA could, in theory, crack it. Perhaps they could. In practice, no. It's a good way to anonymize yourself. It's not something you're going to want to do all the time. And it's used, I think, quite insensibly by dissidents, people in China, for instance, who don't want the Chinese government to know what they're up to. The weakness, though, of course, is this entry node, because it knows who you are. And if governments can subpoena these servers, they often do, and if they can backtrack, which they could in theory, then they could still find you. It just makes it doesn't hide you perfectly. It just makes it harder to find you. A VPN does not do that at all. If you use a virtual private network, you will emerge onto the internet with the IP address of the virtual private network. But, of course, that's a single node, and a subpoena to that single node will tell the government everything they want to know about what you've been up to. Just as your ISP knows everything you're up to anyway. So don't worry about it, in other words. Hiding your IP address is, in most cases, not something that's worth the energy to do. What I do think is worthwhile is using encryption on your email. And not that, you know, not which I do. Whenever somebody sends me a note saying I'd like to have private conversations with you, I add their encryption key to my keychain. And then every time we talk, however innocuous the conversation, it's sealed away from prying eyes. Only the recipient and I can see what we're talking about. And I'm doing that right now with hundreds of people all over the world, which means I'm probably a target for the NSA. They've even said, if we catch you using encryption or Tor, we're going to presume that you're not a U.S. citizen. You know they're not supposed to spy on U.S. citizens. We're going to presume, because we can't be sure so we're just going to save it all. Which is why I think we should all use encryption. Let's just all do it. It's none of their business what I'm talking about. Of course it's innocuous. None of their business. None at all. Let's talk about Kit Kat bars, much more appealing. Google has decided to name the next version of Android not Key Lime Pie. You know, they're all desserts. Going back to Cupcake, Donut, Eclair, it's letters of the alphabet. A and B were robots, so we don't worry about them. It was Astro and Bender were A and B. Because Android is a robot. It's an Android, right? But then by the time they went public, they decided, no, we shouldn't name them after robots. Because we're going to run out. Let's name them after desserts. There's an infinite supply of those. So C was Cupcake. D was Donut. E was Eclair. F was Froyo. G was Gingerbread. H was Honeycomb. I, Ice Cream Sandwich. J, the current one, Jelly Bean. We all thought K would be Key Lime Pie, but no. Apparently Google's made a deal with Hershey. Actually with Nestle, which owns the... Hershey owns Kit Kats in the U.S., but Nestle owns the rights. Made a deal with Nestle to call it Kit Kat. It's an advertisement. I guess you shouldn't be surprised when at Google, which is the biggest advertising agency in the world, uses advertising, sells. They said no money exchanged hands. Oh, come on. Maybe not literally, like nobody gave them a dollar bill. But Kit Kat's going to release specially marked Android versions of their Kit Kat bar inside a coupon for Google Play Store or free phones. Yeah, no money changed hands, sure. Yeah, Nestle's just doing it for fun. It's just fun. Just good, clean fun. Come on, Google. You don't have to lie to us. Of course, some value has exchanged hands. It may not be greenback dollars, but some value is exchanged at this. And that's fine, I guess. I feel like open source projects with Android shouldn't have commercials in them. But that's just my opinion. It's memorable. They built a giant Kit Kat a statue on the Google lawn that looks good enough to eat. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We could talk about Android. We could talk about iPhone. There's a new one coming. We could talk. I'll tell you what. People ask me, what's your favorite phone right now? And this is, I put my money where my mouth is because I buy these phones. When I was a BlackBerry guy until the iPhone came out, for several years, iPhone. Right up to the iPhone 4 or 4S, I think. Then I kind of got, Android got better and better. I've tried all the Android phones, but they finally got good enough. I started using Android phones. And love the Nexus 1, one of the great phones of all time. I can't go back to the iPhone, to be honest. Galaxy Note 2, love that big size. HTC 1, most recently, but now I've converted. I purchased a Moto X. I don't know what it is. It's a cute little phone. There's just something about it. The way it works, the way I hold it in my hand, I just love it. But every phone is different. So you can ask me what you should get, because it's different for everybody. Dylan in Anchorage, Alaska. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Dylan.
Hey, man. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
Hey, I just wanted to say, I love your show. I listen to it as much as I can.
Thank you.
And I had a question about Google Glass.
Yes, sir. Those are the glasses. Well, they're not really glasses. The glasses frames.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And up here, we're notorious for losing service.
Yeah.
And I was wondering how the network would connect to the glasses out.
You can't use glass without an Android phone. At least you can't connect to the internet without an Android phone. And glass without the internet is like a day without sunshine.
Right?
That's what I'm thinking. You can still take pictures and take video, but you're not, you can't do anything with it, and it'll store a limited amount. So what you use is you'll have a phone in your pocket, an Android device. It uses Bluetooth dial-up networking to connect with it, and then the phone's connectivity is what connects you to the internet. And you need the internet for things like when you have glass on, you say, okay, glass, it wakes up, and say, take a picture. All of that will work without the internet. But then if you want to post the picture or look at Google Now cards, that kind of stuff, you do need the internet.
So, like, if the internet went out, like, if I wasn't in range with my phone, like, the glasses wouldn't work?
It'd work. You could take pictures, but you wouldn't be online. You couldn't do navigation. You couldn't – the same stuff you can't – you can use your smartphone without the internet, without even a connection. Those kinds of things, like taking pictures, will work, but you just can't upload them. You can't navigate, things like that. And, of course, glass, remember, now you're not being – this may all change because you can't buy glass right now. It won't be out for a while. So this may all change, but the current state, that's the way it is. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let me tell you about Ting. Ting is this is one of our advertisers. I love Ting. If you go to techguy.ting.com, you can save $25 on your first Ting device. The idea of Ting is they resell Sprint service, but they don't. There's no contracts. There's no early termination fees. There's no bundling. You pay for what you use and no more. In fact, they bill you at the end of the month for how much you've used, which is awesome. So, I mean, you can go here and look at the rate plans and see what the costs would be. Like here, you can have as many phones as you want on a single plan. So let's say 4 phones, 1,000 minutes, 2,000 text messages, 3 gigabytes of data, $110 for a family of 4 a month, not each. Total. I bet you that saves money. You can have as many phones as you want on a single pool plan. You have a great dashboard that lets you know exactly, what's going on with your Ting account. We love Ting. And no hold customer support. You call them during regular business hours, a real person empowered to help you will pick up the phone. Give it a try, techguy.ting.com, to save $25 on your first Ting device. Read up on it. I think you'll agree. It is the way cell service ought to be. Techguy.ting.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number. Richard next. Oxnard. Hi, Richard.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hey, I was just listening to your comments earlier about Gmail. I know you're a Gmail person, but they're bragging and fighting for their supposedly right to read every Gmail that comes through them. And use it for their advertisements. And I thought that was kind of curious.
Because you know that anybody who's... So what do you use for your email?
Verizon.
And what does Verizon use? They use...
I go online and do it online with Verizon.
It's just Verizon. Do they have any spam filtering?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. How do you think they do that?
If I designate it as spam, then...
No. They read your email, and they look for words like Viagra and stuff like that. Every email provider that fights spam or does filtering is reading your email. They're not a human, but a computer reads your email. Now, there is that last clause of the sentence that Google does that's different from many, although I bet you Verizon does it. What Google does is they'll customize the ads. You don't get rid of the ads if you turn this on. You can turn it off on Google, by the way. You don't get rid of the ads, but the ads won't be customized. So Google looks for keywords. By the way, in spam filtering, they're doing the same thing. And they will customize the ads based on the keywords. That's the only thing Google does that's different from anybody else. And I would submit that Verizon probably does do that, whether they tell you they do or not. Most services customize the ads. Otherwise, you get ads that are meaningless. Does that bother you?
I would rather them not in my private stuff, yeah.
Okay, but you understand, it's not a human. It's just a computer, and it's the same thing Verizon's doing to look for spam. Verizon's doing it, too, right now. You know that, right? And by the way, Verizon's handing it over to the NSA.
Yeah, I know that.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people say, oh, I don't want Google reading my mail. Every single email provider that filters spam is, quote, reading your mail. The problem is our human brain, when we think reading, we think some guy is reading it. It's a computer scanning the mail, algorithmically looking for stuff. In the case of Google, it's not only looking for the words Viagra and, you know, hot girls to filter out spam. It's also looking for keywords and then matching them to ads so that the ads match your interests. To me, it's the same, and it's not. There's no leak of information to any human agency because of that. Now, Microsoft made a big deal. They have those Gmail man. He's reading your mail, and they made sure it looked like a human. It was a guy reading your mail, which I got to point out. Microsoft Outlook has spam filtering. It's reading your mail. It's doing the same thing. Now, you can in Google, you can say, I don't want to add customization. You could turn that off.
Oh.
But you're getting a free service from Google that you're paying Verizon for, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gmail's a free service. I would say a very well done free service. Probably better done than your Verizon. What's the storage on your Verizon mail? It's not 7 gigabytes, I'm pretty sure.
I think it's like, yeah. Or maybe something like that.
Yeah. So, and you're paying them for that. You're not paying Google. The way you pay Google is you allow them to put ads on the side of your Gmail page. And you can say, I don't want you to customize them. I personally prefer to be customized. At least it's something I'm interested in. But there's no human reading it. Don't think that there's some guy at Google headquarters. There's no time to do that, looking at your mail. It's just scanning it. Now, the irony is, after Microsoft made this big deal about Gmail, man, we find out that, in fact, Microsoft's handing everything over to Google to the government anyway. Now, when the government gets it, then you can be pretty assured that at some point a human might well read your email, because the government's got a whole different agenda. They're not just putting ads up on your web page there. So I understand. Nobody wants anybody spying on them. But it's almost a disconnect about the language here. When we say read, we kind of think somebody's... Well, let me see what he's writing about right now. It's not. It's a computer machine scanning for keywords. That's all Google's doing, and everybody else is doing it, including Verizon.
I thought they were doing it by the sending address.
What they look for, as far as I know, is keywords. Now, as far as sending address, that's public. Mm-hmm. All of this is so-called metadata. In fact, the government believes, the Department of Justice has held, that all of this is not protected in any way. Who you send mail to, who you get mail from, the subject line of your mail, all is public, according to the federal government. It is being recorded by the federal government. Furthermore, the government believes, the Department of Justice believes, that if you don't, any email older than 6 months old is public. So if it's in your mailbox more than 6 months, they have the right to it without warrant. So I wouldn't worry about Google. You know, I really don't think Google's the problem. In fact, Google's response, it's interesting to these revelations about the NSA, is that they're going to start, not only they've already been encrypting stuff on their hard drives, but when stuff is moved from one Google server to another, for instance, Gmail to Gmail, if you email somebody from your Gmail account to their Gmail account, it's encrypted all along the way. They're actively, and I believe them, because I know these guys, they don't like the government any more than you do searching their stuff. They're actively trying to thwart government surveillance. Having a computer look at your mail to find spam and or to target email ads, to me, is not horrible. But if you don't like it, you shouldn't use Gmail. That's like kind of the trade-off. Here, we're going to give you this nice free service. We'll support it by putting ads on the service. And we're going to customize those ads based on keywords in your mail. To me, that seems like a good trade-off. But if it's not to you, don't use it. Just use Verizon. Although, if I were you, I wouldn't assume that you are in any way private when you're using Verizon. And in fact, really, people worry about Google. You should worry about your ISP. Verizon's your internet service provider. AT&T. Who's your internet service provider? What are their agreements? What are their privacy protections? Google's much more upfront about what they collect, what they do with it. They allow you to delete it. And, of course, you can always quit them. But anytime you go on the internet, you go right through your internet service provider. And they, believe me, most of them, if they're telcos, certainly are giving whatever the government wants, they're just giving it to them. And we know this. We've known this for years. A whistleblower in San Francisco said that the National Security Agency had a special room at AT&T headquarters in San Francisco where they were collecting every single thing that AT&T, people who used AT&T WorldNet, their internet service, where they were collecting it all, everything, every bit of it. So we shouldn't cast stones. They're all doing it. And you should probably presume that if you're putting it on the internet, somebody's reading it. And if you want to use Gmail, use it. But understand, it's not private unless you encrypt it. Now, you can encrypt your mail. You absolutely can. It's easy to do. I use an open PGP tool called GPG that does it. Nobody can read it, not even Google. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt is here. He's our photo guy back from the monastery.
Yes, back from the monastery.
How are the monks?
Oh, just fine.
They there or was it a deserted monastery?
No, it was an active monastery. We couldn't shoot any pictures of the monks, though. That was kind of the private thing.
They didn't want you to steal their souls.
I don't think that's...
No?
I think they're modern.
They know better than that? Yeah, all right. So Chris had a photo workshop at a monastery. Where was the monastery?
Well, I was in England a while ago. So
a British monastery
in Farnborough.
Fun, but he's back and here to help bust another photographic myth. Chris is a professional photographer and a geek, and joins us every week when he's not at monasteries, leading workshops. Give us a photographic myth. Bust a myth for me.
Let me try. Lens hoods are there to show off and make your lens look bigger.
That's not true.
I've heard people say that. I've heard people say, what do you need that for? That's just a macho thing, you know? And
So when you have a fancy camera, they have these hoods, the rings that come out. Sometimes they're just round and they extend it a few inches. Sometimes they look like flowers almost.
They're for like tulip shapes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and I have them on all my lenses, and I use them. But I don't know why.
A while ago, I talked about lens flare and how it can actually be a really pretty cool thing, that it might actually look really cool. Now, let me turn around at 180 degrees. Let me go the opposite direction today, and let's say that let's assume lens flare is unacceptable.
Okay. Although J.J. Abrams doesn't agree, but okay.
Oh, yeah, but what does he know? He still shoots on film. He shoots his movie on film. Which is true, by the way. So anyway, you know, some lenses are really prone to flare, especially the ones, it kind of goes with the price of the lens, has to do with how much of the, how good the anti-glare coating is that they put on those different glass elements in the lens. And as a result, sometimes you get, well, on the one hand, real flare, really visible streaks of light and things, but then it can also be very, very subtle, really subtle, and just show itself in a loss in contrast. So pictures will sometimes be a bit washed out, which pretty much means blacks aren't black. Blacks are just a bit gray. And then sometimes you see people having lens hoods on the lenses, but backwards.
What? So oh, yeah, that's just to keep it out of the way.
Exactly, but... Yeah. But
doesn't do anything, in fact, then.
Well, and some people simply don't know what it's good for. Oh. What is that good for? Well, first of all, what you want to do is you want to take it off the lens. It kind of twists, so you can twist it a few degrees, then turn it off, turn it 100 degrees, and then put it back on the lens so it faces forward. And yes, it will make the lens look bigger. It will make you look a bit more important, but it has a real purpose because here's what it does. It keeps the light off that... off the front of the lens, and especially, well, you need light in front of the lens, otherwise you couldn't take a picture, right? But there is light around the picture that does not contribute to the picture. It's just not doing anything to the picture. It's just there, and it shines into the lens. And I'm not even necessarily talking just about the sun. You know, like direct sunlight, if you're shooting towards the sun, it's not in the picture, but you will definitely get some artifacts there. But actually, it's any light. The sky, even a white wall, will reflect light back at you. So the lens would take...
It's one of the things that I often am bothered by with a smartphone photography is lens is because... In fact, I'll cup my hand around it to make a fake lens ring because I'm getting all of this stray light leaking into my fan camera. I hate it.
Yeah, I think an iPhone or a smartphone would look funny with a little lens hood on, but I'm pretty sure there is such an accessory. Someone's got to build one of these. But yeah, cupping your hands around it, just trying to make sure that the light, but not just the sun. I'm talking about really pretty much any light that does not do anything for the picture. Now, if you don't have a lens, well, if you have one and it's on the lens the wrong way all the time, hey, turn it around and see if it does something to your pictures, if it helps get more contrast. If you have, if you don't have a lens hood, you can get a third-party one or an original one, which are kind of expensive sometimes. But there are third-party producers that make ones that fit. Or if that's not an option, you could position yourself so that, or the front of the camera, so that it's not in the sun, that's in the shade. There might be a tree standing there, something between you and a direct light source. And that will make your pictures more contrast if you don't like lens flare. Again, that's the assumption under which we're doing this today. So
I use it all the time. I love it. It has a secondary feature, which you've mentioned many times. It protects the lens. If you and I'm always bonking. Yeah. My lens against things because I have a bigger lens than most guys.
Yeah.
So I keep that thing on there so that when it bonks, it's going to bonk that instead of the glass.
Oh, and if it rains, you don't get raindrops on one of the lenses.
No. So I use my, on every lens I have, I use it. I have also heard that it, in fact, can solve some lens accuracy issues. It really is somewhat important.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, if you don't like any of these artsy things with lens flares, if you don't like the J.J. Abrams look, then put the lens hood on if you have one. If not, cup it or move yourself out of the sun and just make sure the sun or any strong light source does not hit the front of the lens.
Chris Marquardt is the guy when it comes to photography on this show anyway, our digital photography expert, chrismarquardt.com. Or if you want to find out more about his workshops, it's Discover the Top Floor. He also hosts a podcast called Tips from the Top Floor. There's the top floor comes in. DiscovertheTopFloor.com.
We're going back to Everest next year in May, and we'll open our registrations October the 1st.
Okay, that's good to keep a track of. You don't go to the summit, though. You don't summit. You go to base camp.
To the base camp. Yeah. Base camp, south side base camp.
I'm not putting it down. That's more than I could do, but that's...
I think it's about 18,000 feet up there. Well, it's going to be fun. We'll take 10 photographers up there. Maybe a few more if we get enough people interested.
discoverthetopfloor.com. October 1st, registrations go open. Now, there's something everybody can do, and that is participate in our assignment. Every month, we give you a new assignment, pictures you've got to take. This is going to be an extra long assignment. You're going to have a couple of, you're going to have 2 months to solve this conundrum, because I'll be gone on vacation in a couple of weeks and won't be back till October. But what is our assignment, Mr. Marquardt?
The current assignment is loud.
Now, we're not going to tell you what that means. It could be anything that illustrates the word, the concept, the idea, loud. So here's what you do. Take a picture with anything, camera, phone, up to, the Rolei film camera that Chris has right there in his hand. And then you will have to digitize it if you take it with a film camera. Tag it with the word loud and upload it to Flickr. You want to add it to our Flickr group, the Tech Guy group on Flickr. Once a week, you can add a new photo. Take new photos. We won't take old ones. And then in about a month from now, maybe a little longer, Chris will pick three and we'll talk about them on the air. It's really just an excuse to get out there and take more photos. Loud. Hey, next week, Chris, I'm going to Italy. I'm going to Greece. I'm going to Turkey. I'm getting ready to go. Maybe next week you can give me some advice for travelers.
I will do that. Absolutely.
Yeah, because I don't, I'm going to bring a GoPro with an underwater housing in case I happen to fall in, because I'm going to be on a boat. It's a cruise.
Well, you already know what I'm going to tell you.
I'm going to bring my Moto X camera phone and probably a backup phone. I don't know what that's going to be. I'm going to bring the GoPro Hero 3. I'm going to bring a TG2 Olympus tough underwater camera. I'm going to bring an Olympus OMD little Micro Four Thirds camera. I'm going to be a 5D Mark II. I'm going to bring 147 lenses. We'll talk next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. All right, everybody, jump on the phone. 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's go to Westchester and Christine, our next caller. Hi, Christine. Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo. This is a really simple question for you.
Good. I'm tired of the complicated ones. Making me work too hard.
So what I'm doing, well, I have a tendency sometimes to misplace my cell phone. So I want a backup phone, and I know they advertise. Well, actually, I haven't heard them advertise for quite a while. But I know there used to be something called Magic Jack, and I thought,
oh, yeah,
cheap. And
they're still around.
Sort of,
yeah.
Wanted. Is that something that's worth my while to get?
So you're talking about having what's called a VoIP phone, Voice over Internet Protocol. It's an internet-based phone that works just like a regular phone does, except instead of using the phone lines, the copper from Ma Bell, it uses your internet access. And there's some advantages to that. One is you could take the phone with you. The number goes with you. So as long as you have internet access when you're traveling, you'll have the same phone number, kind of like a cell phone.
Okay.
The disadvantage is related to that, which is that 911, the emergency service, some don't even have any. And if they do, it's an E911, and you need to register your address because obviously the phone could be anywhere.
Oh.
Right? Because you can move it around. It's not tied to your home address.
Uh-huh.
So don't use it in lieu of a landline for emergencies. I think in most cases it's a good idea to have a landline for emergencies.
Mm-hmm.
But because if the internet goes out or the power goes out, it's not going to work. On the other hand, since you misplace your phone, this is a
I'm
good.
Not any worse off than I was before.
Right, this is a good choice. Magic Jack's fine. There's a lot of ways to do it. I use something that's free. Magic Jack is not free. You have to pay a yearly fee, although it's not very much.
Right.
All the thing about VoIP, and I'll tell you about the free thing in a second, but I should say the other thing about VoIP, besides the 911 issue, the other thing about VoIP is it's very dependent, the quality is very dependent on your internet bandwidth.
Okay.
Now, voice is not challenging, so in most cases it's fine, but you know how, have you ever made a Skype call?
No, I only have a BlackBerry, and I don't think I can do that, right?
Yeah, no, but you could do a Skype call from your computer over your internet, and you'll see some.
True.
You've heard, in fact, you might have heard it on the show. People like Chris are on Skype. Sometimes their bandwidth goes down, and they sound like they're underwater and stuff, you know. So, but voice is not too challenging. It's really a matter of, having a consistent, reliable internet. access. And if you do, then this is certainly a good backup. Again, I like to have, and I have, I believe everybody should have a landline. I like to have that. Although nowadays, with everybody having cell phones, you kind of do have a second line of defense, don't you? So Magic Jack is one solution. They advertise a lot, so they get a lot of attention. Frankly, Skype is free and works. The other thing I use is it's a little more geeky, a little more complicated, but is free, is called OBI 110 from OBI, OBIHAI.com. Similar to Magic Jack. It'll connect to your internet router, and you do have to have it won't work with Wi-Fi. You'd have to put it next to your router. And it'd OBHAIR instead of OBHI, and apparently that's a product too, but not the one I was looking for. Here's OBHI. It is a little box that hooks up to your internet, and then you can plug a cordless phone into it. It has a phone jack on the back. And now it will give you, if you use Google Voice, which is a free service from Google, free calls via Google Voice. In fact, you get a phone number because Google Voice gives you a phone number. OBHI does not support 911. So you really don't want to use this as your only landline. It isn't a landline. But you could take it with you. It works. You can use it on your smartphone. You could actually put the OB software on your BlackBerry and make calls, free calls from your BlackBerry. These calls are free anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. I think it's a little geeky. Think of it as a challenge when you first set it up. But I kind of like it. It's kind of cool. And the advantage of something like Magic Jack or OBHI, OOMA is another one, OOMA, is you can use a regular phone handset. You can pick up a phone handset, and that's nice. You don't have to use your computer or a cell phone. You just use a regular phone. 8888, ask Leo, Magic Jack, it works pretty well. Read the reviews on all of these before you spend a lot of money on them. Actually, they're cheap, aren't they? Jim, Orange County, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jim.
Yes. How are you, Leo?
I'm good. Welcome.
So good to be on your show.
Thank
you. I'm watching you as well.
Hey, I'm waving at you right now.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's a great, very picturesque wave.
So is my arm.
Oh, that's perfect.
It's waving a life of its own. What can I do for you?
My son has an iPod that was splashed in a pool.
He purchased
an audiobook on it, and now I need to know how to get it from iTunes to another device. Can you help me?
Oh, yeah. So he purchased it in iTunes?
He purchased it in iTunes, yeah. And it was on his iPod. It was an audiobook.
So the way iTunes works with audiobooks, they've eliminated copy protection in music, but they still have it in audiobooks. So it has to be another iPod or iDevice.
Like an iPhone then?
Yep. iPhone would work. You just put iTunes on it, download it. You can download anything you've ever purchased on iTunes right to that iPhone.
Okay. Even if it was downloaded on the iPod?
Yeah, yeah. You can download it as many times as you want because you've already bought it. It's true of music too, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what I have to do is just go into iTunes on the device I have and just re-download it.
Yeah. When you go to iTunes and you look at your playlist, there are little clouds next to the things that you've purchased but don't have on the device.
Okay.
So those little clouds, if you tap the cloud, it says, okay, I'll download that. You can also do it in iTunes on your desktop and then sync the phone or other device to it. As long as it's the same Apple ID, he owns it, and he can get it again. Yeah.
Same Apple ID. I own them all, and they're all the same Apple ID.
Yeah, yeah. So he can get it again.
Cool.
Isn't that nice? Now, does it require iTunes Match to do that? No, I don't.
I don't think so. I thought about that. Going, well,
yeah, and if it does, that's $25. But that's a handy thing to have anyway. But I think you could do it without iTunes Match. Yeah.
Sure.
Just go into purchase. There's a purchases tab. Just go in there.
Right. Okay. Can you tell me something about Ting?
Yeah. What would you like to know?
I'd like to know is if you already have. I'm on a contract now, and I have all iPhones. If you have the devices, can you go on Ting as well?
So here's the deal with Ting, and it's an advertiser, I should mention. They are an MVNO, mobile virtual network operator, that resells Sprint service. So, but they're a non-contract, you know, they're month to month. So if you are under contract with a service like Sprint or whatever, are these Sprint phones right now?
No, they're AT&T.
No, you can't move them over. For a couple of reasons. One, AT&T is using a different technology called GSM. It doesn't work on the CDMA network that Sprint uses and Ting. Secondly, Ting has a limited number of devices you can move even if they're Sprint, and I don't think they have iPhones yet. So you'll need to get a new device, a Sprint-compatible phone for it.
Okay. Very good. But tell your sponsor we were thinking about them anyway.
I will, Jim. I tell you, for somebody with a family, with kids, it's great because it's a single pooled plan. It's very affordable. I don't know. What am I giving them a free ad for? They're a good company. I like them. That's why. Have you been in the post office lately? I haven't. Mm-mm. Nope. Don't go anymore. Nope. Don't like it. I like the post office. It's fun. I go and hang out once in a while, but I don't go there to buy stamps. I've got all the stamps I need from stamps.com. Stamps.com does an amazing thing. It lets you buy and print official U.S. postage using your computer and your printer anytime you want, day or night. We've been talking about Stamps.com for some time and all its features, and we've actually been talking to Stamps.com users who found out about it from the show. And one of them is Christian Langley. He has a business. It's called Easy Seals. Now, at first I thought he was renting seals for parties, but no. They do engineering plans for building contractors. It's not quite so exciting, but obviously they're doing a lot of shipping, right? They have to mail those plans out. Christian is a sole proprietor. He does everything from design to production and, of course, postage. He says, I used to buy standard USPS rolls of 100 stamps. And then I would guess the weight of the package. I put the stamps on. And, of course, you always want to put more stamps. You don't want to post. The worst thing to send a client, you know, postage due. That's insulting. So you always put a little more on, right? He said he always overshot the actual rate because he was using 46-cent stamps. So, you know. Then he heard us talk about stamps.com. He decided to try it. He now, of course, always has exactly the right postage because he's got that digital scale. He says he likes the process efficiency it brings to his company. You will, too. I've got a no-risk trial. It really is a great deal. Visit stamps.com. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, and you'll be getting a $110 bonus offer. It includes that digital scale that Christian liked so much, up to $55 in free postage. You get a $5 supply kit. You get a 4-week trial of stamps.com. Stamps.com always have the right postage, prints right on the package or the envelope. Actually, I guess it doesn't print on the package. It will print right on the envelope with your logo, the return address. It gets the mailing address from your address book or QuickBooks or Etsy or PayPal or eBay or Amazon, whatever you're selling on. I mean, it's really amazing. It even automatically fills out international forms if you do international mailing. You got to try it. Just if you've got a business where you do mailing, please just do me this favor. Go to stamps.com, click the microphone, and use the offer code TECHGUY. You'll know you got the right place when you see my smiling face. Stamps.com. Well, hey, 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 or should I say, hey, 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 Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, anything with a chip in it. We will talk about it. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, and you can also use your internet telephony application to call that number. It won't cost you anything anywhere in the world. 888-ASK-LEO, the website, techguylabs.com, techguylabs.com. Let's see. We were going to go to the phones here and talk to Pete in Anaheim. Hi, Pete. Leo Laporte.
Hi, Leo. Great show.
Thanks for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, I have a problem, a fun problem. I hope it's a fun project for me. I have a what I'm trying to do is trying to broadcast some of our league hockey games.
Oh, have fun.
And,
you want a camera not for recording, but a camera for streaming.
Yes, I'm on live stream right now, so I just have an HTC One, and I just live stream from there.
But no, you could do better than a camera phone, yes. That's for sure. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you want Zoom, you want to be able to, yeah, there, you know, yeah. Absolutely.
And on this one, I can only pinch to zoom in, to zoom out, and it's just impossible.
Yeah, that's not going to. So, this is a challenge because you need a camera that has live HDMI out. That's not as uncommon as it might sound. In fact, most cameras will. In fact, they'll give you excellent quality, better quality than the recording quality. But then you need something that'll stream from that point, like a laptop that takes HDMI in. You need something that will capture the video from the camera and then compress it and then stream it over the internet.
I need some suggestions on that. I need to get a computer that'll.
Yeah, the camera's not the hard part. It's the computer that's the challenge. Stuff,
right?
Yeah.
And the 4G service just keeps on going.
Yeah, yeah. Internet. Oh, that's right. Because you're at rinks where you don't know if you've got internet.
Yes. Right now, I have T-Mobile, and it goes out once in a while during a game. So I just post it.
Yeah. What you're trying to do is cool. Yeah. But non-trivial. And, you know, this is what we're doing, of course. We stream live video of all of our stuff, but we're doing it in a studio with $5,000 a month worth of bandwidth. So
yes,
we're in a kind of a different position.
Right. So I don't know what... So I need a second camera. Right now, what I did on our last season is I have a HD camera and basically just recorded the games and then uploaded them to YouTube,
right?
And the results were nice, but
yeah, that's going to work fine. It's the live thing that's so hard to do. So here's what you need: a camera that has HDMI, live HDMI output. If you go to camcorderinfo.com and look at the reviews there, they'll tell you which ones do. Almost all of them that have HDMI out now do live output. Not all, so you should check. But you want it to pass through. You'll get very high quality video. Then you need something that can put that video into your PC. Probably the best solution is from Blackmagic. They have an HDMI to USB converter.
Okay.
Then you can use any laptop. That's not going to be. That doesn't matter.
Okay. So any.
Just because a laptop has an HDMI port, it's not going to solve that for you because that's an out. That's HDMI out in most cases, not in.
Will a MacBook Pro work good?
No.
No.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes. Once you get the converter, it'll work fine.
Okay.
Yeah. In fact, that's a great choice. Powerful, fast, and then you'll need your internet access, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Livestream probably has an app, right?
Livestream, yeah, they have the app that goes onto the phone.
I bet they have a desktop app. I would check and see.
They do. They have it for producers.
Use the Livestream producer and make sure you get a computer that's matches their specs or probably exceeds their specs.
Okay.
And then now, of course, once you do that, your next step is going to call Leo again and say, okay, now I'd like to have two cameras and switch between them.
Well, that's the whole thing. I need a second camera.
Oh, no. Now, come on.
So how long can the USB cable,
No. If you're going to do that, you need a switcher now. Now we're talking some real money.
Oh, my.
Blackmagic. Go to Blackmagic's website. They make actually a pretty good choice. It's $1,000, I think. Switcher. I like Blackmagic's stuff.
Okay, great. Well, those are great suggestions.
Yeah, just visit the blackmagicdesign.com. They specialize in making not only high... We use a lot of Blackmagic stuff in our production chain. But among other things, they make a fairly inexpensive production switcher, the ATEM. A-T-E-M. And if you're going to use more than one camera, now you need a switcher. Now, basically, you're building a television studio, my friend.
Yeah, I know. That's what's fun about it.
Maybe you should go back to the camera phone. I think it'd be a lot cheaper. Steve and Torrance, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, Leo, I'm curious about, I know that all the law enforcement can just drive around and scan everybody's license plates get scanned.
Sure.
And I know that our...
That's because you don't have... There's no constitutional right to drive. Driving is a privilege, not a right.
I got that.
But the internet is very different.
There's our legislators, their families, and their cronies, I guess, have a, they can go get non-scannable plates at the DMV.
Really? Can they? Wow. Wow.
I'd like to be almost as equal as they
are. Here's what you do. If you don't want your license plate to be scanned, and you should check your local jurisdiction to see if this is legal. It probably isn't. In fact, I'm almost certain it's not. But maybe legislators haven't caught up in your state. It's easy to, in fact, we thought about doing this in the studio here, to thwart cameras by invisible infrared light. So what you need is LEDs that emit light, not in the visible spectrum, but the invisible spectrum that jams the camera, in effect. So all the camera will get is a bright light on your license plate. But what's cool is it's invisible to the human eye, the naked eye. So we were going to make a, is it UV? Maybe it's UV. It's out of the visible spectrum. It's either at one end or the other. We were going to make little collars, people who come in the studio, because, you know, we got cameras on all the time, and we have to make people sign a four-page waiver when they come in. And among other things, what the four-page waiver says is we can use your image, broadcast it, show it, take your head off your body, put somebody else's body on it, whatever we want to do. We were thinking of making, if people didn't want to do this, making special collars with infrared lights all the way around it that would jam cameras. So you'd look like a glowing ball of light as you walked in the studio. I would imagine that this would work on your license plate as well. And the nice thing about this is it's probably fairly low power. And I'm sure it's highly illegal. I cannot imagine that it's not illegal in every state in the union. It's probably covered by the same law that prevents you from putting mud on your license plate. A low-tech solution on this one. Just because members of Congress or law enforcement have rights doesn't mean you have rights. It doesn't work that way. John in Burlington, Ontario, Canada. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, John.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I am very well. How are you?
I'm good.
I had to think about that. Maybe it's this hat I'm wearing. I think it's making my head hot.
Well, it looks like it could be hot. And
it's very warm.
It's heated up here, by the way. It's
Theater Monkey gave me this hat. It's a very, it's jazzy.
It looks good.
Yeah. What can I do for you?
Well, I actually have the guy doing the hockey streaming. I do hockey streaming.
You're kidding me.
I do.
How awesome is that?
But I go through a company.
Ah.
They send us the computer, and we stream it through that computer from my camera. Now,
did you have to? You more.
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, actually, let's take a break, because we have to. And when we come back, you can give us the details and ask your question, because I know you have another question. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte. Excuse me. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And we were talking before the break to John, who's up in Burlington, Ontario. He streams hockey via a service. Now, in Canada, they take this stuff pretty seriously, right?
Yes, they do.
It is not the national sport, though.
No, technically lacrosse is the national sport up here.
I don't think anybody knows that.
No. Well, if you're Canadian, you should.
You should. I love lacrosse. My son plays it, and it's a great sport.
But oh, yeah. I've videoed it, too. So
we always think of Canadians as hockey players. Anyway, so what's the name of the company?
Fast Hockey.
Fast Hockey.
Yeah.
And they provide everything?
They provide the computer. We have to supply the camera and okay. The people that run the camera and stuff like that.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
That's good to know.
Yeah, and they do leagues across North America. So if this guy's running a league, he might want to look into it.
Yeah, and you could at least see what they do. And
yeah, know. And they charge for people to watch it, so that's where they make their money.
So it's free to you.
It's free to, it's free to the person doing it, but I don't know if they charge the league or not. I haven't got that far into it.
That's interesting.
I just do it on the computer and do it. But getting back to my question.
Yes, forget that. What do you want to know, John?
I want to be able to post my highlighted videos of my hockey games, but I don't know if there's a charge for video for the streaming up and down and all that or the storage of it. I was using Posterous, and Posterous closed, and it was great because I could send it to Posterous, and it was done. Everything was loaded up to YouTube and all that.
Yeah, there are a number of companies that will offer pay-per-view, if that's what you're looking for.
It's not so much that. I kind of like to have all my stuff in one spot where people could go look at the work I do, and like because it's a business that I'm running.
Yeah, Posterous is, of course, gone.
Yeah.
There is a company that's taken over for them, former Posterous employees, and you pay $10, I can't remember if it's a month, it's called Post, or $5 a month, posthaven.com. Yeah, it's probably too late to import your Posterous stuff. The deadline for importing it ran out.
Actually, I downloaded it.
Oh, you're golden.
I think I did it.
Yeah, you're golden then. Yeah. So you can upload it to Posthaven. It's the same software.
Oh, okay.
But they did something a little different. Posterous used to be free. Posterous was, we should explain, I loved it. A blogging site, you know, kind of like WordPress or whatever, but the difference was you could email your posts. And Posterous would then also forward posts depending on their type. So if you emailed a video to Posterous, it would upload it to YouTube and put it on your Posterous blog. It was very cool. I used it when I was in China because Twitter and Facebook and YouTube were blocked in China. But email can't be blocked. You know, you're not going to be able to block email. So I would email tweets and pictures and video to Posterous, and they would repost it. It was awesome.
Yeah, I liked it because that for that fact, you only had to upload the video once.
Yeah.
You could do it multiple times.
So now, Posthaven doesn't have all the capabilities yet of Posterous, I'm sorry to say. But what's great about them is, unlike Posterous, they're not free. Why, you say, is that great, Leo? Because they're going to stay in business. Posterous got sold to Twitter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter just shut it down. They didn't even, they made no effort. They just shut it down. This, you know, this won't happen, they say, at Posthaven because
they're monetizing.
They're going to make money, $5 a month.
Now, the other thing is can you, put your own web address to the Posthaven?
Yeah, I'm sure you can. Go visit Posthaven and read the, it doesn't yet have all the capabilities. It was started by former Posterous employees. I'm sure the intent is to give it all the capabilities, but as I noted, it does not have them already yet.
Okay, yeah, because they like I loved the Posterous, and I even though it was free, I would have paid for it.
I know, I loved it too, and it just kills me. Yeah. Darn you, Twitter! This happens a lot, unfortunately, and the reason is engineers, good programmers, are a real scarcity in Silicon Valley. Well, everywhere, but in Silicon Valley in particular, and so companies like Twitter will often buy a company not for the product. They bought Posterous not for the product, but for the engineers. And they just shut the product down. Facebook does that a lot, too. It drives me nuts. So there's a good reason. You know, you might say, well, why? You know, hey, I could get this. Posterous was free. Why should I pay Posthaven, you know, $5 a month? Well, because. And there's still no guarantee that Twitter couldn't come along and buy them. But if they make money and they're doing okay, they've pledged we will never be acquired. We will always keep your URLs online. You'll always keep it the best place to post. They've made this promise. So should they sell out, there'd be some pretty angry people. And the fact that they're making money on it is a pretty good sign. The founders were two of the co-founders of Posterous in 2008. And got bought by Twitter in 2012, and they realized it was kind of a bummer. So for people exactly like you, John, Posthaven set up. I don't think they're quite up to full speed yet. I did move my Posterous blog over there. I haven't checked it in a while. posthaven.com. That's a good outcome. There was another service I used to love, Dropio, Drop.io, allowed you to quickly set up a free way to send somebody a file as a link instead of, you know, they would store it and then somebody could get it. It was a great little service. Facebook bought it, not because they wanted the service. They shut it down promptly because they wanted the guy who founded it, Sam Lesson. Brilliant guy. So they paid Sam a lot of money. They said, shut your company down. And those of us who were using it were just left out in the cold. These companies don't care. They really don't care. Sad to say. Let's go to line one. Richard in Monrovia, California. Hi, Richard. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
I think I'm Richard.
You, my friend, win. You are Richard.
Well, I don't know if I won anything, but...
you won the right to speak on the Tech Guy Show.
I bought a new Nexus. 7.
Good.
And now I'm wondering what in the heck am I going to do with it. I have a next book, two next books.
Okay.
Which, well, we all have our problems, and I bought these some time ago. However, I got a new one because I heard you and people praise it so much.
So now I have a responsibility to help you with it, don't I?
You got a book, right?
We're losing. Something's going on with this with the sound here.
You got a peg in the right hole.
So let me talk a little bit about what you got, Richard. And it is a good device, and it's very affordable. It's probably the best small tablet, 7-inch tablet out there. Very, very fast, beautiful screen. I'm sure you've noticed all that. But it's an Android device. So Android is maybe a little different than what people are used to. It's not Windows. It's not Mac. It's not OS, iOS. It's something different. I'll talk about, it's a good subject. When we come back, I'll talk about your first Android device and what you should do to use it in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So Richard called, love this call. It's a great call. Got an Android tablet, now what? So you'll notice an Android tablet, much like any smartphone these days, it's got icons on the screen. It's got a dock at the bottom with the most used icons. And you can move all of those around. All you have to do is press and hold. You can drag them around. So I always have at the bottom in my dock the things I use the most. On a phone, of course, the phone and the SMS messaging would be down there. But on a tablet, it doesn't have to be. I think you get 7 on the tablet. But one is the most important, is the one in the middle. That's the little round circle with dots in it. That's the application menu. And you always want to have that there, because when you tap that, you'll see a screen slide up with all of the applications installed. It's just like any computer. And what's nice about tablets, they come usually with a pretty good set of applications. In the case of Android, it comes with all the Google apps. Gmail is on there. Google Maps is on there. You've got Google Plus, their social network, Google Play Store, Google Music, Google Movies, all of those are great. The first thing you want to do, in fact, because of that, when you set up an Android phone, is create a Gmail account or a Google account if you don't already have one. If you have one, log into it. But if you don't already have one, you just create a new Google account. That single sign-in will be your sign-in for everything from YouTube to Google Plus to Picasa Web to all of the Google services. And make a good password. Don't use monkey123, Richard. Make a good random password. You obviously have to remember it. But for security reasons, I turn on second-factor authentication on Google, and that's nice because it means that not only do you have to enter the password, but they will text you to your cell phone a 6-digit code, and you'll need to enter that as well the first time you use the tablet. It means if somebody gets your password, they can't just use your Google account on some other device, because Google will say, well, you've never used this device before, so let me send you a text message with that 6-digit code. Unless they have your phone, they're out of luck. So that's a nice thing to do, is turn on second-factor authentication on Google. Now you've got Gmail, really probably the best email solution out there. You have a Google address, in fact. So when you set up your account, make sure you pick something that you like, that you can remember, that is fun. You wouldn't really want richard@gmail.com. You don't want any common name at gmail.com because you get a lot of spam. But Richard, your last name, Richard and a number, Richard and Go 49ers, something that is fun that represents you, that's unique. Once you've got that set up, now you can go to the Google Play Store and you'll see lots of applications to do all sorts of things. There's plenty of room on that Nexus to download hundreds of applications. So go ahead and try some stuff. Browse around. The apps that I think a lot of people will want to use, of course, Facebook, if you're on Facebook. You know, you want the social networks you use, Twitter, if you use Twitter. I like to put Tumblr on there, and Foursquare I use for check-ins. Instagram, because there's a nice camera on that. You can take pictures and post them on Instagram. I use Evernote as a note-taking app, although Google now comes with Google Keep, which is actually a very good note-taking app. Keeps your notes, stores them safely on the Google Drive, so you don't ever have to worry. Even if you lose your Nexus, you don't lose your data. The calendar is great, too. I use Google Calendar, and that'll be part of the Google set that's included. In fact, really, probably the best way to start with your Nexus 7 after you've created your Google account is just play with the Google apps. Right there, they're giving you quite a bit. There's even voice dictation and voice search. Turn on Google Now. That's fun, too. That's the little Google icon, just the G icon on your screen. I would say that the best thing to do is just play with it. Make it your little buddy. Spend time fooling around with it. Take a look at it. YouTube is great. Lots of good videos on there. I think, Richard, you're probably more intimidated than you need to be. It's easier to use than you think. And I think it's a great choice. $229 for that tablet. Now, you do need internet access. I hope you have Wi-Fi at home. There's no good if you don't have some sort of internet access. They are not yet selling Nexus 7s with built-in LTE. It uses the cell phone data network. That would allow you to pay an extra $20 a month and have internet access. Those should come any day now. When those come, that's a good choice if you don't already have internet. Enjoy. Let's go to another Richard in Westlake Village, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome. What can I do for you?
I'm pretty good at normally backing stuff up, but I got a little lazy recently on a laptop. It's a MacBook Air, which had a SSD upgraded drive. It came with a 240, and I put a 480 into it some time ago. Everything was working great on the device, and then all of a sudden, I had some troubles. It stopped working, and occasionally it couldn't find a directory, the machine, when I went to start it up, and other times it would find the drive and but not be able to sustain access to it. So I did a number of things, including taking the drive over to some of the geniuses at the Apple store and also to an alternate Apple dealer, and no one was able to access the data on the drive anymore. Fortunately, I used Dropbox for basically all of my data, so I haven't lost any of the most critical things, but all the work you go through setting up apps and preferences and so on, typically I use a external drive and mirror the internal drive with a program called SuperDuper, so if you ever have these catastrophic failures, you can do a restore in a matter of minutes or hours. But I got kind of lazy and didn't sustain that. And now I'm unable to access the data on the SSD. So short of just starting all over again, I got the third-party drive maker to warranty the 480 SSD, so they've already sent me out another one. I was wondering if you had any thoughts on how I might restore access data on the SSD drive. I know this is... being a solid state, they're generally very durable and safe, and the laptop never suffered any physical damage. So I just don't know what to do here. The only other bit of information I might give you is that when we look at the drive, I think there's a 33K prefix that we do see with drive utilities such as Drive Utility or Drive Genius and whatever else the Genius is used. Nothing else substantive on the drive itself.
Yeah, short answer, I think you're out of luck. Seriously, I don't know what you could do to... An SSD drive's a little different than a traditional drive. When it's dead, I don't think you can do any of the things that you do to recover a spinning drive. I think it's dead. I hate to say it. So you're going to have to just start from scratch. I'm glad you were using Dropbox. I'm glad you were backing things up. I'm glad you got a new drive. And you just, that's where SuperDuper is so great. If you use SuperDuper, it's a Macintosh backup program. You can actually create a duplicate of your drive. And then it has a scheduling feature. You got to pay for it for the scheduling feature. But the scheduling feature means it'll keep it up to date. And that external drive becomes a bootable drive that's identical to your internal. But I don't think there's anything you can do once a solid-state drive is gone, I'm afraid. Aaron, Albany, Oregon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I love your show. I listen to you almost every day. So some
fabulous.
Way or another.
Thank you.
Here's my question. I know a lot of people have this happen to them, but I'm the tech guru in my whole friends and acquaintances. So
hold on a second. I hear something. Wait a minute. Listen. Oh, you know what that means. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. More of the tech guy, and I'll finish your call when we continue. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. We were talking to Aaron in Albany, Oregon. Hi, Aaron. Sorry to interrupt.
That's fine. So I have a friend that has MS, and he's blind as well. So wow. he can't hold the like I mentioned an Android device because that's what I love. Yeah. And so the Android device, I played around with it on my phone for the accessibility, but it's always had me touching the screen to move around.
So he can't touch the screen at all?
He cannot.
Yeah, voice command alone, you know, Android's very good on voice command, as is iOS, but I can't think of any. The problem is the apps. You know, you get into an app and it's going to want you to touch the screen.
Correct.
So you can, for instance, I can on my Moto X, I can, without touching it, I can say, okay, Google Now. And it will launch and it'll say, good afternoon, Leo. And then it says, and then I can give it a command, you know, like launch Gmail or something. But the problem is that then I'm in an app and I've got to use the app and that's going to need a touch. So
what would you suggest?
Something that he has to be totally voice control.
Correct.
And he can't see. Boy, I'm sure there are great solutions. I mean, this is what computer technology can do. But mm-hmm. I don't, off the top, I'm not an expert in this.
No, I understand.
There are people who are expert in this. There are in many cities independent living resource centers, places like that, Lighthouse for the Blind. I don't know off the top of my head an answer to this. You're going to have to call them, explain the situation. I'm sorry. They're very good. These nonprofit agencies are really good at customizing the technology to the need, and that's the key. You know, every disability is a little different. Every need, accessibility need, is a little different. So that's why I think you're going to have to go somewhere like an independent living resource center and say, "Here's what I need." Off the top of my head, I don't know anything that works totally with voice, because it would basically need to be like HAL 9000, right? The computer in 2001, you'd have to speak to it; it would speak back to you. Would have to read you the screen. Not being able, being blind and unable to touch the screen, is going to be tricky. You'd be able to do some things. I'm not enough of an expert to be able to help you. I'm sorry. I apologize. Maybe somebody in the chat room is. You know, our website, techguylabs.com, exists for just this purpose. You can go there. This is episode, 1012. You can go to techguylabs.com. Each episode is there, question by question. You can, after the fact, listen and watch the question and my answer. We break it up by question and answer. And then there's a comment field, and you can comment. So if you go there and you go to hour three of episode 1012, please, if you've got a solution, a suggestion, somewhere he can call, please add it. Dr. Mom in the chat room says HelenKeller.org has resources and services. Of course, Helen Keller was deaf. She was unable to speak. She was blind as well, and yet changed the world. So these issues can be solved. I don't know if she could have used an Android phone, but maybe that wasn't necessary. HelenKeller.org. Anthony San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Anthony.
Hey, how you doing today, Leo?
I am well. How are you?
I'm great. I didn't know they were going to put me through. I have a very short question. I have the Note 2.
Okay.
And I was seeing an advertisement already for the Note 3 that's coming out.
Yep.
My Note 2 is probably only maybe going on 2 years old. So what's the latest and greatest on that phone, and is it worth upgrading?
I think it might be. I don't have it yet, But they did announce it just this week, 4 days ago, at IFA in Berlin. And, you know, as you would expect, the Note 3 is a little bit better in every regard than the Note 2. It's one better. It's a 5.7-inch screen instead of 5.5, although nicely done, because the phone is actually not any bigger than the old one. They just reduced the size of the frame. It has a stitched leather-like back instead of the glossy plastic back Galaxy phones usually have. I guess Samsung was stung by criticism of those backs. It has, I think it's got to be plastic, right? But it's got stitching. You know, it probably feels better in the hand. I haven't touched it. I don't know. Still the stylus, and that's really the strength of the Note, and they've really enhanced what you can do with the stylus. There's a new pop-up circular menu that will appear when you hover the stylus over the screen that shows you what your commands are. They have better ability to multitask. I don't know if you use the dual window feature of the Galaxy Note 2, but that's been even more improved in the Note 3. You can, for instance, save Windows sets and open the set. So if you always browse and use YouTube at the same time, you can just have a button that does that. It's, of course, more powerful, 3 gigabytes of RAM instead of 2. I think it's a good choice. I think if you like the Note 2, as I do, it was one of my favorite phones of the year in 2013. I think that, or 2012, I guess. I think that the Note 3 will be a very good choice. Every carrier will have it. It's making its way to international markets end of this month, and it'll be early October in the U.S. I would, of course, go look at it. Resolution also improved. Yeah, the original Note 2 was 1280 by 800, I believe. And the new one is a full HD resolution, 1280 by 1080p. Very nice. Very nice phone, I think. Dennis in Staten, Oregon. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm the tech guy, and I'm not a computer guy. And I don't know half of your vocabulary.
All right, I'll use plain English if I can.
That'd be great. Initials and all that stuff, you know, good
way. No acronyms. You got it.
Okay. I'm also old and don't want to learn a whole new world. But I have to coexist in the one that's changing.
That's true. Yeah. And, you know, don't think of it as a whole new world. It's a real opportunity. My mom's 80 and loves her iPad. There's a lot of stuff out there. The whole world is at your feet with the Internet.
Okay. But in my case, I learned it today, forgotten it tomorrow.
Me too.
So when I say old, I mean old.
Okay. I got it.
Okay. So I own a business. I've trying to have my sons take it over, but they fool around too much. I get stuck.
You know, I'm worried about my business, too. I don't think it ain't going to be Laporte and Sons, I have a feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's old time stuff.
That doesn't happen anymore now.
Yeah, not much. So here I am. I've got, reluctantly, in my business some time ago, they demanded I get a email device.
Mm.
I mean, a fax device. I got that. Within a month, another customer required I could do email. Now I got a new customer that wants me to text.
They're dragging you, kicking and screaming, Dennis.
And
here's what I got my mom, and I think you would love it. We were just talking about it. I got my mom a Galaxy Note 2. It's very big. It's almost a tablet-sized phone. It allows you to do texting, but it's very easy to see. You can have big letters if you want. And I think fairly easy to use. It is a tablet plus a phone. It'll do email. It'll do texting. It'll even do faxes if you set it up. That's the best I can do for you because I'm out of time. Have a great Geek Week. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.